and welcome to Fishy Business, a series dedicated to exploring the lesser-known side of cybersecurity. I'm Alice.
And I'm Brian, and we're colleagues at Mimecast. Every episode, we'll be joined by a special visitor, who's definitely not your average guest, to share tales of risk, reward, and ridiculousness.
We'll be looking for new ways to think about cybersecurity, to learn how we can all improve in the fight to stay safe. Brian, how many Slack messages do you think you receive in a day?
I seriously dread to think, and it seems that most of my work is done either through Slack or Zoom, and certainly that's how this podcast gets done.
That's true. And COVID-19 has led to exponential growth in the use of collaboration platforms as we all had to adapt to working from home. Zoom's revenue, for example, soared 326% in 2020, whilst Microsoft Teams grew from 0.8 billion in 2019 to 6.8 billion in 2020.
With us this week, we have a bit of a pioneer in the world of communication and the new way of working. Christoph Magnusson is an entrepreneur, keynote speaker, podcaster, and devotes himself to inspiring individual productivity and self-determined work, including harnessing the power of the now omnipresent collaboration tools we all use daily.
Christoph is also the founder and CEO of Blackboat, a tech-focused consulting company designed to help leaders increase team efficiency and productivity. Well, this is very timely. Welcome, Christoph.
Thank you.
It sounds like you've got a few exciting jobs in there. Why don't we start by going back a little bit and understanding, how would you explain your job to someone at a dinner party, for example?
I started as an entrepreneur, I think, when I was 16 or so. So back in school. And
wow.
And I found that everything I wanted to do was around like organizing stuff. And I was organizing on the phone. So quite often I was stuck at home making phone calls. There are still a lot of old pictures on it. And if you would ask my kids today, they would also say, like, daddy's on the phone all the time. But this quickly turned into more technology-driven business because I figured the phone is just my communication tool. And whatever the tool is or might be, I wanted to find ways to like make that easier. So the very first smartphone, I, of course, bought it. And that was very passionate for me. I still can remember Motorola StarTech, very expensive phone. But yeah, this is how it all got started. And if you would explain what I do, I help people to collaborate in a better way, to help them work together, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
So Christoph, maybe if you could just explain to us what the proudest moment of your career has been so far.
I would say it's a sad moment, but a proud moment at the same time. Realizing that I was in the way of my own business, stepping aside and starting another one. So I left one of my companies that I founded as a founder and said I want to work in a different way. And back then, I realized that just because you choose to be an entrepreneur doesn't mean you can like work whatever way you want. Especially if you have investors and you always have someone you're like connected to, your clients, your investors, your partners. And I realized I wanted to build from scratch a company that I would like love to start working every morning, like when I get up. And this is when I founded Blackboat, with the dedication to help people to improve collaboration based on technology, but also based on the methods that we're using. So I would say this is a sad moment because I left one company, but also a proud moment because I was bold enough to say, I leave it and I start something new and I don't leave the people behind, but take some of them with me and start something new. That's what I would consider.
So some of that entrepreneurial work and that early work you did involved filmmaking. And it feels a bit like you're using your filmmaking skills and passion to help organizations communicate in a better, more effective way. You know, would that be a fair assessment?
Very fair. Thank you. Brian, better explained than I would do it. Part of this journey when I decided I want to work in a different way was that I realized my passion is, as you can see in the background and for you guys at home hearing, there are cameras on my shelf and a photo book and stuff like that. So part of my hobby, my passion is photography, filmmaking, especially the storytelling part. And I was on a offsite, or how you call it, a long vacation with my young family back then. In Canada for 3 months. And after 3 weeks, I got so bored that I went into a store and watched a bunch of YouTube videos and realized I did that as a kid. I made a lot of films. The camera was always at home laying around and my parents would let me use it. And I said, why don't we use YouTube or anything like to tell this story? And we use myself as the brand, because I cannot leave the company in this case. It's my company. It's the one I want to stay with. And this is how I actually started with that. But it's kind of self-taught. And we figured that storytelling and sharing stuff like podcasts, like videos and stuff like that is a huge part of helping people to work together in a better way, as we can see now in the pandemic, especially if using that. I mean, I always try to make sure to have a good video quality, a good audio experience, although my room since I moved in here today is still quite empty, as you can hear, but that's part of the deal. And yeah, so that's quite fair to say, and I would always do that again.
And when you're working with companies and they've transitioned through, you know, the pandemic from probably mainly office-based now to everyone working from home, what have you found to be some of the biggest struggles maybe that companies have had in terms of that open communication, having those communication lines and transferring into that working from home premise?
Actually, the same as before. The main problem is that you find leaders who find difficulties or challenges, which I can understand, to trust the process that work will happen, because it's much easier to manage if you are at the office, but it's hard to lead, which means leadership to me is something you do, not a title you have. So you lead by doing things, or especially not doing things. And to leave your people is a big part of leadership. It's the same with kids. I mean, if I play with my kids, at the same time, I'm the safe haven. I'm the safe harbor, which they can come back to, sit on my lap, and then go out and play and have an adventure. They need both. And this is a big challenge, because the new communication tools before the pandemic already, which like Slack and Teams, which you mentioned, we are promoting them for, I think, Google for the last more than 10 years already. Microsoft is a bit behind, but still caught up tremendously. And the lack of trust in these tools when it comes to transparent communication is huge in companies, and this stayed quite big. So my guess is that now everyone will bounce back to the office, and then it will go back on a decent level, like with the internet. After the bubble, it bounced back. Everyone said, no, the internet's nothing to stay. And then, of course, some people knew it will grow in a solid way. And this is what we could see, and this was a big, big challenge. So the trust, the transparency, and then also the tools that you actually need to like keep going.
I think that's quite an interesting area to explore. I think a lot of organizations globally, this was a giant experiment in trust, wasn't it? In terms of nobody really was sure that everybody would go home and actually carry on working. And in some cases, I think many organizations were quite surprised how many people, or let me flip that around, how few people were actually problematic, because the vast majority of people just got on with things, didn't they?
Oh, 100%. I mean, first of all, we all want to work. If we believe it or not, we want to work, we need to work. It helps us to like structure the day, give us purpose, give us meaning. And we like it. We like it. If we wouldn't like it, not so many people of us wouldn't do it. And I mean, of course, we are in a bubble, because there are people who need to work to earn their money. They have then two jobs at the same time. But all of us sitting here, that's a bubble, and we need to realize that. And people go home, and of course, they need some time to like get it going. But if you idle around for a week, okay. If you idle around for 2 weeks, usually you're a pain in the butt for yourself, because you said, okay, I need some structure. I need kind of get going for the day. And this is what many companies realize. And I think that it's important, because that's an important experience to like keep this home office thing going on a solid level. But what you need to do is more the mindset behind. That's more important than just the tools at home. So for example, we bought very expensive equipment for everyone at home. And a lot of the people said, like, why do you invest it? Because I said, a business class flight to New York is twice the price of this equipment. And we don't even discuss if that's necessary. We just do it all the time, which is nonsense for the environment, which is nonsense for people traveling, which is like nonsense in many ways. So that's interesting in terms of mindset, not in terms of technology. So this is how I usually challenge companies to see, like, what is the mindset? Do you really think that people should be able to record a podcast from home like you guys do, to make a video from home like I do, then to switch back to the office, which I believe will stay the main and most important communication tool when it comes to emotional and very important communication. But we will switch throughout the day. And this is something that's here to stay, I'm pretty sure.
And going forward, how do you sort of envisage the world of work? I know I've spoken to some people and they say, oh, the office will be dead. I've spoken to others and they completely disagree. I've spoken to obviously some companies where they're going completely remote working, whereas there's even some companies who are paying for their employees to come into the office because, you know, they're desperate to have the office back at full capacity as soon as the restrictions are lifted. How do you envisage that world of work going forward, and where do you think there will be the right balance?
Yeah, very simple. I mean, the grass will not grow any faster if you pull it. And that's a German saying. I don't know if it works in English, but
that's how I love it. That. That's brilliant.
if you leave nature, magic things happen. Either way is too extreme. I mean, we have new spaces. We have three times the amount of space after the pandemic than before. And then people say, like, why do you have the space and not the people are coming? I said, you know what? It's not just for bunching a lot of people into a small space. It's also to, let's say, make a stream happening, to make an event happening, to give people the option to leave their home if they realize, oh, it's tough to sit at home with the kids, with the parents, with a partner, without a partner, in many ways, and that we are desperate to go out and have a beer. So there are so many obvious things to me that I'm always surprised when I think, like, desperate to like get people back, desperate to leave them at home, desperate to not have them at home. I know it's too extreme in many ways. It will bounce back to a decent level because we're human beings. At the core, we are very social and we want to work together. That's a huge part of our like self-identity as a human being. So what I'm looking at are very interesting new concepts. For example, we have meetings with camera, of course, but we have also established a meeting which is called our morning radio show, which is all hands, but it's audio only. It runs here when I'm at home on all the devices. I listen to it in the background. It's very structured, very nice. And whenever my name is called, I'm pulled in and can say something. But it's much better than a phone conference because it's structured in a different way. And then we switch back to video meetings and so on. So we kind of, go like that through the day.
What would be your top tips to companies to help their employees be as efficient as possible with those communication channels?
So one of the words you all heard, probably Zoom fatigue, up and down. And we made a very early video on that saying we are not made for our 8 hours video conferencing. Not at all. So make sure you have meetings that are one-on-one by phone. If you have one-on-one, really challenge if you need to see each other, because we are much more informal and social on the phone. And the video meeting is the new formal, not the new normal. It's the new formal. And this is a big issue because if you sit in a meeting room with too many people, you don't chat about very important things and you don't hear the things between the lines. And it makes us much harder to read faces and interactions over the distance. I just made a screenshot from here to share later on with the guys to say, like, hey, the interview and so on. So we share that internally, which is then the next thing. You need to put much more effort into making stuff transparent and showing it to your people, like what you're working on and stuff like that.
And with the work that you currently do and working, I'm sure, across borders, you know, not only in Germany, but also beyond across the rest of the globe, have you found different cultural differences between countries and companies within those countries around how they collaborate and the use of those collaboration tools?
The interesting fact is that like when I talk to friends, especially my friends in the US or US based, they are now bouncing back to the office, many of them. right away. So they have a very different work ethic. We found differences that it's much harder to connect with some of the cultures that is already hard sometimes in person, and now much harder in over the distance. But the big advantage is everyone is going through the same thing. Everyone on the planet globally. That's unprecedented, and that's a big chance, and we should never forget that.
I think that's very interesting. I manage a team that's very multinational, multicultural. I think it spans 7 or 8, I haven't exactly counted, countries with at least 10 different nationalities spread across the, you know, that's just the physical location. The actual cultures that people come from are quite different in some instances. Mm-hmm. And only about half of them have English as a first language. So I think that's very interesting, is trying to find the commonality. I think the other issue, though, is something that I think of as the personality profile of the team. I don't know if you would agree with this, but I think it's almost as if introverts are suddenly at an advantage compared to extroverts. The extroverts seem to be struggling the most. I manage a team of sales engineers, so they kind of tend to come from quite a mixture. There's a sales element to them, but there's also an engineering element. So you get this mix of introverts and extroverts, which you don't necessarily always get in other teams. You know, one personality profile tends to dominate, whereas I have an interesting mix. And I just see that the extroverts do seem to struggle because they can't use their old techniques to kind of dominate the conversation the way they used to. And that's been quite interesting to me. It's just the personality profile of the different teams and then working with the wider, bigger team and how that all plays out.
If you have kids and you see how they jump into a new thing, like exploring something new, how excited they are, how they lose their idea of time. And that's a flow moment for kids. Of course, sometimes they struggle with new stuff, but in many cases I see they're curious and want to find out. What we do as adults, once we are really mature, we always say, oh, I suffer more than you suffer. Or my life is harder than your life. Everything is the same. It's just different color and different intensities. And at certain peaks of your life and phases, it's worse and some is better. I would say everyone suffers the same. And at the same time, everyone is good at the same time. We are lazy. Once we learned what works, we do that all the time. And what a big advantage these days to say we need to learn something new. Suddenly, you're single and you need to find out, wow, how do you date during Corona times? How do you break the ice in a video call? How do you start a conversation if you usually don't like to talk to people before 10 o'clock? If you need to, like, if you need to run. All these things. And I've seen so many creative solutions. It's just our mindset saying, oh, this is hard, this is tough.
We've done some research in Germany, and the majority of respondents we surveyed said that communication takes place on these remote tools could range between work, but also that personal and maybe some of that gossip chatter as well. Do you find that these tools are replacing the traditional, if we can call it, water cooler chat? How important would you say it is to preserve and maybe give space to those non-work related interactions as well?
If you are a super traditional US-based company sales manager, open plant of cubicle office, and you believe that what you say will happen word by word, I mean, this is the very old way to manage. And this is not only US-based, this is true for many other industries and companies, but it's this thing that we have in mind. I would say, yes, these tools replace a lot of that chat, and it's super important to also enhance that as a leader. I do it myself, sharing stuff. I shared a lot less on social media throughout the last year, but a lot more internally to show my people I value what you read and comment, and if I have a good week, bad week, whatever. So the strong points, but also the weak points, and showing this vulnerability of also a leader. We had an example last week. Fridtjof Bergman died. He's the inventor of the term new work, and Fridtjof and I developed a very close relationship throughout the last years when we met him the first time for a podcast, and then we made a video of him, which was my last flight I actually did to visit him. He was 90 years old, sitting in a wheelchair. And when he passed away, the first day I said, like, yeah, he was old. And then the next day, it all came up, and I had to cry for the first time in like years. And I made a video after that, and a lot of my people said, well, that was very touching, and I said, yeah, well, it was very authentic. And this is a side you would usually say, yeah, I never share that. But you know what? This is human life. It happens. The sun came up every single morning. Very interesting. So I would challenge it. I would say we have to do much, much more to learn that.
Were there any changes that you found through your way of work, or any changes you had to make through the pandemic that you found surprised you or caught you off guard?
I found it surprising that Zoom took off so fast, because I knew Zoom for a long time, but I thought interesting that it's that a tool that is dedicated to one thing is the go-to place, and not a tool where it's integrated. Like many companies had Microsoft Teams already and other tools, or even Google, and still going to Zoom. That was very, very interesting to see. I found it also interesting very surprising that people believe that once you want to roll out Microsoft Teams, let's say to 20,000 people, they wonder, why is it not just a click and then done in a week?
I think what's been interesting to us is how quickly the cyber criminals adapted to the pandemic and the sort of new way of working, and how slowly many organizations responded. And now we're going to swing to some sort of a hybrid middle, and I suspect that the cyber criminals are going to adapt more quickly yet again. So I'd be interested in your views on that.
For us, it's part of our DNA at Blackboard, working with our clients on a very solid cybersecurity base. As I said, that's why we work with you guys. And I have very good people looking into the companies we partner with and work with. We always leverage someone externally. We never do it on our own. But we have, for example, a former hacker for the Deutsche Telekom as a senior advisor for the team. So we're very, very solid in doing that and looking at that. And I'm so surprised what you said, how slow companies are adapting even before the pandemic. We had so many examples. I was doing live pitching on stage and showing people how easy it is to like impersonate a CEO of a bank. I did that with a bank on stage to show them how easy it is. And they were like, okay, that was a trick. I'm like, I'm not David Copperfield. That's not a trick. It was very simple math. And I'm not a tech guy. It's growing in importance tremendously. Super important to invest and to make sure that the day won't come. And if it comes, that you limit the effects that you have. And we had hacks, we had clients have been hacked, and it sounds very complicated to do that. It's in many cases not. And that's why you need all the sides. You need the technology, you need the tools, you need the partner, but you also need to work with your people to explain them what to do, because there's a lot more responsibility with the people these days than in the old days. It's not like in the old days you could say, oh no, it's not my business, let someone else do it.
And I think, yeah, the only constant really seems to be change. And as part of that change, one needs to adapt. One thing that probably stays the same is it's always that triangle of people, process, and technology. But the people side really seems to be, from what you've been saying, acquiring these new communication skills, becoming much more adept, working between environments, and then making sure you do that securely. It's been fascinating talking to you. You know, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We always like to end our episodes by asking our guests three simple questions.
So, Christoph, looking back at your career, what's the one insight that you'd wish you'd learned sooner, or that you could maybe go back and tell your younger self?
Keep going. Always keep going.
Perfect. Great advice. I love that.
And I think that's great. I think that talks to resilience. It's one of the key topics that we keep returning to over and over. We can also tell quite a lot about our guests from what they're reading or listening to at the moment. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you'd recommend for our listeners?
I would love to read more, definitely. I always try, but as I said, I have kids on my own, doing it on my own half of the time. So I had to realize it doesn't work. But I read one book over the last weeks and months. It's called Why We Sleep, The Importance of Sleep, because I'm a very driven person, achiever, always on the go. but realizing the importance of sleep for, in my heart, I'm very creative, and how important the REM sleep is, what caffeine does, what alcohol does, what all the aspects of sleep. It's very, very solid scientific book. I highly recommend it, especially if you are still feeling that you're not at your full potential. And if you have kids, even more important, Why We Sleep.
That's great. I'll definitely be taking that one away. I'm a huge lover of sleep and a bit of a sleepwalker. So I would love to find out more about
that. Definitely check it out then.
And looking to your future, you know, this time next year, where do you think we'll be with the new way of working, and what trends do you think we'll be spotting?
I would love next year around this time to see experiments with augmented screens and how they can more integrate in homes, offices, and so on, so that we don't sit in front of these black squares anymore all the time. It feels like back in the 90s.
Absolutely. We'll have to get you back next year to see if your your predictions have come true and what screens you have in the future. And thank you so much again, Christoph, for joining us this morning. We'll definitely learn a lot today. Do you have any final recommendations for us that we might have missed?
No, not at all. I definitely have to thank you, Alice, for guiding through, and also you, Brian. I'm very excited, and I love the podcast, and especially that it's of course touching the topics that you guys are interested in, but in a very natural way. And I really love this format, I have to say. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you back, because I can sense there are still burning questions from both myself and Brian. So I don't think this will be the last time.
Definitely. I think we've covered some just the surface of some very interesting topics today, and I'd love to sort of do a deeper dive in some of them. But finally, where can our listeners learn more about you and about Blackboat?
Just Google Christoph Magnussen and take whatever you like. If it's YouTube, there's a lot on YouTube. If it's LinkedIn, take LinkedIn. Instagram, I promise that it will do more. And then also the Blackboat website, blackboat.com. But I would, you know what, the most natural way is you Google a name and you think, oh, I like or don't like this person, so I have a look. And that's the way you should take, and then take whatever video is out there. There are quite some.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Christoph. And thank you so much also to all of our listeners for joining us on this week's Fishy Business. It's really been a pleasure to have you with us. If you enjoyed our podcast, please do leave us a review on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you're hearing this. And feel free to follow us on our Twitter page @Mimecast if you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today. Thanks, everyone.